Uber is set to start trading on the New York Stock Exchange next month in what's being heralded as the biggest IPO in years. But in the process of preparing to offer its first public shares, the ride-hailing companies revealed a range of concerns that could pose a risk to its projected $100 billion future. And it warned that despite having 91 million users, it acknowledged it might never actually make a profit. In a letter to potential investors, Uber's CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, acknowledged Uber's checkered past and promised to act with passion, humility and integrity as the company goes public. And just this week, around 5,000 Australian Uber drivers should receive a driver appreciation award. That's up to $14,000 if they've completed 20,000 trips or more. It's all an effort to atone for some of the egregious behaviour that has propelled Uber to the top, according to the Australian Financial Review's Tech Observed columnist John Davidson. In that, he suggests, Uber is following a path laid out by other American tech startups, and it could be hitting some decent log jams. I'll let him explain why. Rosalina Kariatakis is also joining us. She's a Sydney-based Uber driver and president of the Rideshare Drivers Association of Australia, and I'll let her explain why there are a lot more underlying problems that need to be fixed. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Good morning, Geraldine.
First, let's hear from a driver interviewed by a recent ABC Four Corners as part of their The Uber Story.
The best thing about driving for Uber is the social interaction. Okay, the money's good if you're a hard worker, getting paid on time and being in control.
Okay, Rosalina, now that driver sounded pretty happy. And now, as an Uber driver yourself, do you line up with him or not?
Well, the initial reaction of all Uber drivers or rideshare drivers is the money is good. But once they start driving for these rideshare apps long term, they realise that they actually lose a minimum of 50% of their income to expenses and taxes.
And the other, of course, very big argument that was made in that Four Corners and elsewhere is that you have much more control over your fate and your time, and that it's seen to be that great boon, you know, of people almost freelancing at their own pace. Now, did you think that, and is that what the experience was?
Well, the freelancing experience, of course, is great. I mean, for every good thing, there is often a bad thing. So the advantage for us drivers is that we can work the hours that we would like, when we like, how we like. So the freedom is the main draw card. Whether or not it's sustainable long term is what we're still currently researching, whereas my income has changed a fair bit over the period that I've been working with them, over 3.5 years. For example, I have to work longer hours now to earn the same amount of money that I was earning 3 years ago. So we do still need to focus on sustainability.
You could see how drivers could be excited by the idea of this driver appreciation award, I gather about $14,000 being delivered.
Yes, that's a lot of hard work, and that's extremely dedicated drivers, and they should be proud. So we were very welcoming of Uber, and we thought it was very thoughtful of them to actually give the appreciation award to drivers. There were certain conditions which a few of the drivers did actually miss out on receiving those awards, and one of them was the fact that the drivers actually had to use the Uber app as a rider at least one time between the 1st of January and April this year.
They had to be a passenger.
Yes, so, you know, I was talking to a driver the other day who has been working so hard to pay his rent and to keep his car that he hasn't been able to afford to go out, so he missed out because he did not use the app as a passenger.
Oh dear. So have you worked out what the average driver does earn here in Australia?
Well, it has been quoted at $21 an hour. It varies between states.
Is that before or after commission? Because they take 25% commission, is that right?
27.5% for new drivers. But in saying that, the original drivers like myself, the reason why we're still going is because our rate still remains the same as the day that we signed up.
Which is what? What's that rate?
Well, it's currently 22%.
22%. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to come back to you, but they are very interesting personal experiences. John Davidson, you wrote a very strong column the other day, and you suggested that a study here in Australia estimated drivers earned about $14.62 an hour before tax, well below the minimum wage of $18.93.
And then once you add in the driver appreciation for someone who's done, say, 20,000 rides, it does start to get them towards the minimum wage. That has to be said, but it's a one-off payment, so they can't count on making the minimum wage on an ongoing basis. And the feeling is it's only going to get worse for drivers as well over time.
And why?
More drivers on the network mean there's less work for everyone to do, and we're seeing that in the United States already. That, say, for instance, in New York, Uber drivers are talking about black banning Uber this weekend or in the lead up to the IPO because they feel there's just too many drivers and not enough work for them. And so their pay is going down over time.
We believe that in Sydney that the drivers are starting to feel that as well, that there tends to be an oversupply of drivers. So, of course, that affects the supply and the demand.
And two extra things. I gather that you say, Rosalina, more and more drivers are using Uber as full-time income, whereas it certainly was at the start much more part-time.
Yes, I agree with that. I'm speaking to more and more drivers each week that tend to be working more hours and pushing it into that 30 to even up to 70 to 80 hours a week.
Now, the other vital issue here is this question of job security, where Uber has the ability to switch off a driver's app and then they're just stranded, aren't they? So tell us in what circumstances that would happen, Rosalina.
We are definitely concerned about the rating system at the moment. I guess I can give an example. Drivers would be concerned about being rated by perhaps a drunken rider affecting their rating, or comments that could be taken the wrong way by a passenger. So it's often one person's word against another, and the driver is often not given a right of reply.
So, and if you were a taxi driver, would you have more power over your fate?
Well, they have the security of the cameras in their cars. So if there was an incident, they would have backup of what happened rather than just one person's word against another.
And how long are people typically cut off from the app?
Oh, people are cut off permanently, and sometimes they don't ever find out the reason why, which is a bit concerning.
See, John Davidson, you covered these and other issues in a Financial Review column recently, suggesting that Uber had been plagued with what you say are symptomatic issues within the broader American tech sector. What are you getting at there?
Well, there's several things at play here. Over the last decade or so, you've seen a lot of the tech companies pushing out the price of their success onto the public. We've seen, for instance, that Facebook's success has come at a very high price for democracy in the USA and in the UK and in other countries around the world as well. Twitter's success has come at a very high price for women who are getting trolled. So there's this broader trend, or there has been a broader trend, of everyone else paying the price of these American tech companies. But following Cambridge Analytica and following what happened in New Zealand a few weeks ago, there really has been a pushback, and we're entering into an era where regulators are starting to look again at these tech companies and are thinking of not giving them the free ride that they've had for the last 20 years.
So do you see the regulatory environment seriously shifting? I mean, we keep hearing about it. It just seems to be incipient but not really happening.
Well, Uber has been subject to more regulation in the last 12 months and has been subject to in the past. We've seen in Barcelona it's been regulated so that a rider has to give 15 minutes notice before they catch an Uber, which has effectively made Uber ineffective, and Uber has actually pulled out of Barcelona. In New York we've seen regulation where they're setting the minimum pay and they're talking about limits to driver numbers. So they're moving into a regulatory headwind that they haven't faced up until now.
And in its public filing earlier this month, despite that there were a whole lot of things were flushed out that hadn't really been apparent, Uber hasn't made any commitment to change its business model, really, has it?
Well, it's improved itself a lot over the years. In the initial days, it was one of sort of the bad boys of the tech sector, and it changed its CEO, and it had
yes,
reformed itself quite heavily, you know, in the last couple of years. But, you know, its end goal is to do away with drivers altogether. So there's a real question.
What, to have driverless cars?
Yeah, that's the long-term play for companies like Uber. And drivers are one of their biggest costs. I think it's their biggest cost. And, you know, it's questionable whether they want to maintain long-term relationships with drivers, given their end goal is to have driverless cars. Mm.
See, John, one might argue that if Uber is going to start using public money, which is what you do when you list, as opposed to, I presume, sort of private money and Silicon Valley and so on, that they will be more hemmed in by the normal expectations of the capitalist system. So may they not, in fact, face quite a few more headwinds and have to change?
Well, they do have to turn a profit at some stage. The investors who are in there now maybe won't be around to see Uber turn a profit, and they don't care. They'll make their money through the IPO itself. But people investing in the IPO will be expecting Uber to turn a profit. And as Uber itself says, it's not clear what their path to profitability is. And the question is, how are they going to do that? Do they put fares up? Do they squeeze drivers even more? Although that seems unlikely because drivers are already complaining about the high charges that Uber imposes on them.
I think they've actually said, haven't they, in their public filing, they're going to cut incentives to drivers?
Yes. In Uber's defence, with the reduced rates, I also believe that the reduced rates would also be due to the competition in the market, due to other rideshare apps entering the marketplace.
I can't see how this has got a happy end, I have to tell you, Rosalina, for someone like you.
Well, I mean, we do enjoy driving for Uber due to the flexibility of hours, but we do need to work with authorities and point to point to sort of work out the safety and the sustainability of the industry long term.
Yeah, this is a new transport commissioner appointed by one state, New South Wales,
yes,
isn't it? Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Right.
And I must note, drivers intend to strike, do they not, on May the 8th?
I believe that there is a drivers association in Victoria that is supporting the strike. RSDIA is not currently supporting.
It's happening in the US, I think, primarily.
Yes, we don't believe that it's at that point yet, because the governments are actually being quite responsive and open, and Uber are also being receptive to our concerns. So we're still hopeful for a positive outcome, but we do seriously need to focus on sustainability.
Okay, look, it's a cliche, but watch this space. Very interesting discussion. John Davidson and Rosalina Kariotakis.
Thank you.